You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Side B of this week's Clock Radio Speakers. If you missed out on Side A, we talked about Grammy nominations. We talked quickly about Pusha T. We also had Jay Givens on Side A, and he's joining us here on Side B. We also randomly talked about MySpace Top 8 and other sorts of CRS randomry. So I've also got Armand here. Jay, welcome again.
Yo, welcome again. Side B, what up?
So we have an actual like project that we can go track by track on. And I don't mean the kind of track by track where Armand just sort of sighs and says, yeah, Doc, you can go track by track. Like we can go track by track because we're talking about Rick Ross.
Yes. Yes.
Do you have a Rick Ross impersonation? I mean, Armand, I know you've got a pretty good Dre impersonation.
I don't. It was really interesting. I guess we'll talk about it. But, you know, the intro to one of his songs, he had the whole crowd doing his grunt. I thought that was funny. Mm. I don't have a Rick Ross impression, unfortunately. But I've been listening to a lot of Ross this year. And I think I've said this on the show, but, like, he's one of my favorites. So I was really looking forward to this album. I felt like the fact that this is his last album on Def Jam, he's all but gone. You know, there's no pressure on Ross. He can do whatever he wants to do. And that was a telltale sign for me as a fan. But I see I'm in the minority.
Well, no. What about you, Jay Givens? Would you consider yourself a Rick Ross fan?
I would say like a pedestrian listener.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I respect what he has. I love his beat selection throughout. And you know, it is what it is. I can't say that he's been like in my playlist or he's like regularly in my phone, but when he drops something or when he's out, I'm on it. Like, let me see what's up. So.
And so Armand, we talked about Black Dollar on the show.
Yes, we did.
Which was the mixtape / album, whatever you want to call it, that preceded Black Market. A couple records from Black Market ended up, from Black Dollar ended up as bonus tracks on Black Market. But otherwise they were, do you consider Black Dollar an album?
We have this discussion so much this year. Like, oh, is it albums? Is it a mixtape? Is it freeze? Or not? Look, it's they're just projects now. Like,
right.
I don't even think that, number one, I don't think that matters. I think the only difference is that Black Dollar was not, was it Black Dollar or Black Market? Black Dollar was the mixtape, right?
Yeah.
I get confused. Yeah, it just, that joint was not, the joint was barely mixed and was not mastered at all. To me, that was the only difference. Other than that, it was album, project, whatever.
All right. So I guess we could just sort of dive into this album here. So Jay, the only other thing I'll ask you is, did you have any like expectations before you listened to it for this podcast, what were you sort of expecting from Ross?
Can I tell you what I wasn't expecting? That's kind of us diving in. I was a little surprised by what I got at the beginning. So I think I was expecting him to just be like a boss, like Boss Rick Ross. Mm. I'm from the stereotypical listener of Rick Ross, where I'm like, okay, I'm finna hear like some Justice League, like, you know, it's gonna be real, like, you know what, I'm a pedestrian listener. So I thought it would be a little more
opulent.
There we go. There was the opulence. Yes, exactly. Like, I thought it was going to be just this luster and just these different like fabrics that I should probably go look up and go find out what these cigars mean and these different types of guns and, you know, all this. You know, I heard a lot of fans watching, so I got that, but it was just delivered in a way that wasn't what I was necessarily used to. So it wasn't as opulent. It was a little more down to earth. Like, I don't know. We'll dive into it, but that's what I got. I expect the opulence.
And you, Armand, what was your expectation?
I really liked Foreclosures. So, you know, fiscally responsible Ross. It was definitely a change. I mean, even a record like We Gonna Make It. And in retrospect, Ross, as much opulence as he sort of raps about, if you go back, he's always been very, you could call it to a degree conscious. He was always very much rapping about what was going on in the culture and et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's, you can go back to Triller and Deeper Than Rap and sort of pick out some of those records, especially Deeper Than Rap, Teflon Don, Tears of Joy, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, to this degree.
You said much more of a blue collar, like.
Yeah. Yeah. There's two goals that I think he wanted to be, you know, conscious, Ross. And he also wanted to say, I can tell that the ghostwriting and everything that happened with Drake really pissed him off. Yeah. He's rapping very intentionally on this album.
Well, and when we get to some of these songs, we can talk about it. I think he's cool. Well, I'm not going to curse in the show, but yeah, we'll get there.
Interesting.
Yeah. But let's talk about the intro. Free Enterprise featuring Grammy nominee John Legend, Armand's favorite R&B singer. Produced by Street Runner and DJ Khaled.
Shout out Street Runner.
This has got to be the most low-key Street Runner beat I've ever heard. Like,
yeah, because he gave another friend of the show, Fern, he produced the majority of his album, and those were very Street Runner-esque beats that he gave Fern, very, you know.
Was there a lot of sped-up samples?
Absolutely.
A lot of hi-hats?
Absolutely.
A lot of drums.
And knowing Fern, he probably asked for it.
Well, hey. That's what Street Runner's good at. This is not a bad intro. This is cool. But for me, what do you think?
Go ahead, Jay.
I wasn't really satisfied with John Legend's performance. Mm. This intro was good, but I didn't even know the difference between Black Dollar and Black Market, to be honest. And so I knew Black Dollar came out, I hadn't heard it, but then it was like, okay, new Rick Ross, okay, let me check it out. Black Market. It wasn't like an epic intro that I expected.
Right.
So maybe my expectation kind of lowered it. But I didn't really like John Legend's like performance on it. It seemed like it seemed kind of mixtape-ish, free album-ish to me.
Mm. What'd you think, Armand?
I liked it a lot. Mm. Ironically, the next song it really built up to set up the next song for me.
Mm. And I like the next song. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's probably why. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like it was dope, but then when like the next four songs come on afterwards, it's almost like it's the slow intro. It's Lust for Life. Although Lust for Life is great.
Right.
It's like a build up. I think for a lot of us, we think the intro is like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like it's the, but you know, for this album slowly builds and kind of goes different places or whatever. And it definitely picks up with the next record.
So let's talk about it. Smile Mama Smile featuring CeeLo. Produced by Jake One.
Love Jake One.
This beat is cool. It grew on me.
what?
Listen. This is not even close to Jake One's best beat on this album. For
it's
starters.
Not.
Okay.
But let me also say that I need and I tweeted this after, I forgot what the name of that Ross record they put out for free, like Buried in the Streets or something like that.
Yeah.
I need a whole Ross and Jake One project. Jake One has not given Ross a whack beat yet.
This is a good Jake 1 beat. It's not a great Jake 1 beat. And the hook, I'll tell you, the first time I heard the hook, I was like, eh, but it grew on me a lot. This whole song really grew on me. But apparently YouTube love it, so I'm going to let y'all run.
I think it was just really personal. Personal for me, like, even just when he's talking about I woke up and, like, you know, my mom said, like, slow down on promethazine, you know,
yes.
And I think, like, I was like, wow, you know, just looking at the timeline of all of this, like, lean, all this promethazine, all this, like, just, like, honorable drug use, and then seeing, like, these MCs age, and then them actually looking back on, like, their addiction. And that's something that kind of hits home for me, because, you know, I come from addiction recovery. And so I was just, like, it's refreshing to see, like, these guys at least, like, emoting that, hey, you know, maybe this is a problem. You know,
absolutely.
And maybe I don't know what to do with it, so I just have to stop and think.
Absolutely. Agree 1,000%. I love this record. CeeLo just sounds like an angel.
Sounds like an angel dressed up like Princess Leia.
Yes.
Charles Barkley concert.
Yes. He has the he wore the crazy suit at? Was that the Grammys a couple years ago? Did he wear like a did he wear like a suit with feathers on it or something?
were they pink? I feel like they were pink.
It was like a bunch of different colors or something like that. I got a room. Somebody send me that picture. Yeah, I love this record. I love exactly. I agree with what Jay said just about the honesty of it. You know, Ross almost died. He had seizures. He talks about having seizures a couple times on this record. And you know, that being the focal point of the song about his mother.
Right.
On to say something like, well, you know what? I'm not sure if I can give up this lean. So if this kills me, I want to leave this with you. That's hard.
Oh, I know how that feels too. Like, mom, I want to stop. Why can't I? I can't.
Yeah.
See, here's my problem is that I have really a hard time believing that Rick Ross is sincere about anything. I fully acknowledge that he is a character created out of thin air. It is very difficult to then all of a sudden take him seriously when he's trying to when he's trying to talk about something that's real. There's always a disconnect with me and Ross. Ross is a fictional character. He's a very talented fictional character, and I like his music, but he's a fictional character.
Stuff. I think we said this. I think we talked about this when Taylor was on the show. I don't care.
Right. I'm saying typically I don't care either, but when he flips and now all of a sudden he wants to be personal, it's like, but you're Rick Ross.
I don't think that's like, I think that this is like, this wasn't Rick Ross. This was like
William Roberts.
William Roberts. I think there was a lot of William Roberts on this album.
And you can see the parts where the album's a little dusty and blue collar and where it like peaks in the opulence. You can see where he's like going through his different, like him.
Yep.
And, okay, let me put on, you know, my brand.
Well, so then let's talk about One of Us featuring Nas. Yeah.
Can I make one point real?
Please do.
I completely forgot it in trying to make sure that I made the point before you. Oh, here we go. We forget that it wasn't really a big deal. Like it wasn't blown up. But remember, like this dude, you know, was in a lot of legal trouble this year. He was on house arrest. He had to put his house. He was in jail for a couple months. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think those things factored in. You know, I don't have to chase BMF anymore. And I've got real life going on right now. And I think that he made it a point to say, you know, let me sort of take off the blazer, loosen up the tie. Like, let me go back into the phone booth and show you this other side. Let me show you more Clark Kent than Superman. I think life will do that to you, man. Life will do, you think everything is all fun and games, and then all of a sudden life hits you and you see everything different.
Now, here's my question to like kind of to what Doc was saying. If then he wanted to do that, what do you guys think about like, okay, I want to show my life. I want to show what's going on. Do you think that he could have like even pushed that issue more like with the actual artwork?
Yeah, I think the presentation could have been better. I think a lot of people ignored the sound because they thought it was, yeah. I think a lot of people, because I mean, I didn't see the Crocodile Python video, but I mean, I saw a still of it and he's shirtless with a bunch of snakes around his neck. Like that is the epitome of opulence. So I think why this album isn't selling so well, I know I'm jumping like way ahead of the conversation.
I'm sorry.
But I think why this album isn't selling so well is because, and you're an art guy, Jay. You do artwork, you do design, all that stuff. The visual presentation is important. So if you were going to venture away from that artistically, you also have to present that switch to the other senses.
Right.
And he didn't do that. Yeah. So I agree. I think that the fact that this just looks like a standard Rick Ross album on the surface, I think that hurt him. That's a great point.
Okay. One of Us featuring Nas, produced by Cavill the Great. What do you think about this record?
Yeah, y'all go ahead.
How you feel about Nas's verse?
So the beat isn't quite there, right? It's not quite there. It wants to be epic, but it's just, there's something wrong.
You're bugging.
I'm not. The horns are too buried in the mix. Like, I can and will nitpick that beat to death. Like, they're going for a feel, and to me, they come close, but not quite. It's a really good beat. It's just not a great beat.
This song's incredible.
It is not incredible. I got a lot of problems with it. Number one, I'm just jumping right in. Number one, it's kind of weird, but I'm okay hearing Rick Ross, the character, brag about having a body on him. But when Nas does it, the facade breaks completely. Because that's not Nasir Jones. Right? That's not Nas.
It's not. It wasn't. It wasn't, bro.
I don't care. I don't care. This isn't like Young Berg talking about he's got bodies. This is Nas. Like,
yeah.
This is Nas. Nas has long rapped about street stuff.
Sure. Sometimes.
This isn't the first time.
No.
This is Nas post Life is Good, though. Like, this is adult Nas.
This is adult Nas. I mean, look, It's clearly a Rick Ross hook, so he's rapping the hook, but it totally breaks it for me. And the other thing that I just never saw coming is Rick Ross outflows Nas on this.
Listen, Nas has been rapping on a mainstream level since 1991.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most rappers who came out in 1999 don't sound that good today.
Sure. But I'm not grading him on a curve.
If you say Ross outflows him, then I'm going to be optimistic and say that you can have your opinion. But Nas, for somebody to be rapping for 20 plus years at a high level, he still got it. And again, this just, again, Nas's Achilles heel is production. When you give Nas a great beat like this record is, he goes in, kicks the door down.
He does not kick the door down on this beat.
Like,
no.
This record is nuts.
Listen to the difference. Listen to how Ross starts his verse off. Ross kicks the door in on this with his flow. Nas doesn't. Because it's a Rick Ross flow. I mean, it's a Rick Ross style beat. He's playing on Rick Ross's turf. It's totally understandable. But the hook totally kind of loses it for me. But it's a pretty good song. It's just not a great song.
I'm done.
Jay, you got anything?
I'd put it in a playlist, but I wouldn't call it incredible. But I would put it in a playlist on my phone. And I might skip it. And look, here's the thing. I love Nas. Like, on the whole, like, I'm Nas all day. And I felt like I could feel like, and I'm a Cadence dude, like Cadence is king with me personally. So like, I feel like he's just sat in the pocket a whole lot more. And I've been like really out of dismay as of late from stuff I've heard from Nas. This wasn't disappointing, but there were some parts where I was just like, all right, did they like nudge his verse to the left a little bit or like what? But then he came back in and I'm like, all right, so is he trying a different cadence or is he trying to do some new stuff or, all right, okay. All right, cool. All right, Nas. That's how I felt.
How you doing, Armand? You all right?
Am I? No, it's cool. Okay. This is what Clock Radio Speakers is.
You know what is a really dope song, though? It's Silk Road.
Yes.
Produced by Ben Billions. This is definitely Ross doing 97 Big. And it is glorious. This beat is great.
This was a grower on me. I'm not going to front.
Really?
Yeah, like the first time I heard this beat, I was like, it's kind of plain. But... hold on, but the two things that make it stand out. Number one, Teedra Moses, who is incredible. Anytime Ross and Teedra get on a record, I need to listen to her album again because it might be on my list because her album was dope. Anytime her and Ross get on a record together, Amsterdam, like anytime she does something with him is dope. And she brings out something in this record and then Ross is rapping. So the fact that the beat is very sparse, it allows Ross to fill it up with rappity raps.
Yes.
And that's what made me like this record.
Yeah. Great. Like this is like the definition of a great album cut.
Yeah.
We get a little switch up on Color Money, produced by D Rich. So this took me a minute. Armand, I'm not trying to be blasphemous. Is there a little bit like of a late 90s Cash Money thing going on with this beat?
This is more Beats by the Pound, No Limit than Cash Money.
Okay.
There's a little bit of Trigger Man in there. This sounds like something KLC would produce. I could hear Silk, Mystical,
C Murder, Mia X. I could hear everybody on the tank rapping on this record. This beat is, to me, this beat is stupid because it just takes me back to 98 and me being a No Limit stand. Like, this record is dope to me.
What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I feel like this is, I'm trying to remember. Is this the one where you had kind of like that, like, draw, like that southern draw on it, super heavy? Is that where it was like a, I'm trying to, it wasn't his voice. It was like, he just had like a heavy draw. And I'm trying to remember exactly which one this was. Cause there was one that I just did not like at all.
This is the one where he's threatening to kill Drake's unborn kids. And there's some shots at Birdman on this too.
Oh no, this one's great.
Am I bugging? Or was there a shot? Maybe not on this record, but it might have been on Silk Road or one of the other records. It just means it was there a shot at Puff too.
Well,
he said something about Puff, and he said, "I only know one boss, and that's me." And he said, "Like no love lost or something like that."
I don't know if that was a big shot. There's definitely, I mean, Color Money, and then of course Ghostwriter. Like, there's definitely shots going out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Puff shot definitely wasn't as big as the shots at, you know, Drake and Birdman. But right. I felt like Puff caught a stray.
I do not like Color Money. I don't like this beat.
Surprise!
Yeah, sorry.
She's like, what song are we talking about?
Excuse me for wait.
Pull it up. You pull it up. We play stuff on the show all the time. Go ahead, pull it up.
Jumping for the Color. Yeah. This was that one. I was like, ah. Yeah.
Oh.
Look, I get it. I get why you said you like it, but I was in the shower here now, and I was like, I went through the feeling. And I'm a Cash Money. I'm in your generation, bro. I get it. You know, I was there. I get it.
The shower test for music is a great test.
Like, that's a good test.
If you're in the shower and the song comes on, and all of a sudden, like, you're really really feeling committed in that, like, dedicated in that shower, like,
yeah,
you're ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, not for low end necessarily, but you know, just for feel, yeah.
I must be old because I listen to podcasts in the shower. I listen to podcasts and like sermons in the shower. I don't listen to music in the shower. I'm weird.
Well, I listen to this,
but yeah, this record is dope. So
I listen to whatever I'm listening to in the shower, whatever's on the
JBL. Yeah, that's real.
Sponsored by them, there? Yeah.
No.
Say that. All right, whatever on the Bluetooth speaker device.
Track six. What should I call this? Dope Richard. We'll call this Dope Richard. Produced by Jake.
Dope Richard.
Produced by Jake One. This beat is ridiculous. I knew it was Jake One as soon as I heard the drums.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a pattern that he does. He talks about it, like a little making of the record he did for Drake. Not if you're reading this, it's too late, but the one before.
Nothing was the same to my furthest thing.
Yeah. So he talked about what he did, like when he talked about making that record, he described it as like he's still using his traditional tools, but then for these more modern drum rolls or drum fills at the end of a bar or something, he'll go into Pro Tools and program them that way. And so I immediately started picking up, like, you can hear like a record like this song where you hear like what sounds like, oh, this is Jake One doing a rappity rap beat. That's great. But then you hit a little drum fill, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Jake One, because that's his little technique.
It's really nerdy.
Super nerdy.
That is really nerdy. Is that that snare thing? Like that?
Yeah.
Hey, okay.
Hey.
All right, I'm on board, guys. All right.
Ross sounds great on this, too.
Mm-hmm.
The hook has even grown on me, as ridiculous as the hook is.
Question, Doc. Seriously.
Okay.
Question.
Are you an idiot? No.
No. Who produced Drive and N-Word Crazy on Black Dollar?
Ooh, it's a good question.
Because I felt like these two records were exactly the same, and I wouldn't be surprised if Jake One did that one.
He did that one as well, and that's a great song as well.
So it really came down to, I've got two records that are very similar. Which one do I want to put on now? Which one do I want to put on the mixtape?
Right.
But yeah, both dope beats. It's funny. They're exactly the same song. So, like, both really, really dope beats. Two very vulgar hooks that I don't like. But then, like, the verses are cool. They're exactly the same, except just one has a chick speaking in Jamaican slang or whatever on the hook.
Jay, what do you think about Dope Richard?
I'm not. Here's the problem is that I'm going to be honest.
Okay? Yeah.
I feel like I'm clumping them all together because there's some highlight moments on the album and then there's some moments where I'm just like, okay,
this is cool.
I heard and I'm like, yeah. So
this wasn't a highlight for you.
This wasn't a highlight moment, but this was a rapidy rap moment.
I think this actually has a way more effective shot at Drake than what he did on Color Money, where he basically just sort of low key slips in there, no shots, but I write all of my raps. Like when you
was that a shot at Drake though?
Could be a shot at absolutely people.
I think so. Every time I heard that, I thought it was just a shot at like the culture of people accusing people for not writing, etc. I just thought honestly when I heard that, I thought he was flexing.
Well, that's part of it too. But like I always feel like if you're sort of in the pocket and you can just you have that sort of confidence and you're in that sort of place where you can just toss off a little line like that, like. To me, those always come off as almost better than when you're really trying to overly make a point. Because then, like, you know, on Color Money, he goes a little far. It's like, all right, you're really going to kill his unborn kids? Like, come on. Like, but when you can just sort of, like, as Jay put it, you just sort of flex and just sort of put it out there, I actually appreciate that more. But yeah. I really like this. This is one of my favorite songs on the album. This beat is great.
Yeah, beat is good.
Crocodile Python. Produced by Ja Lil Beats and Ant-Man Wonder. I know what you're thinking, Armand.
Stole my man's beat, yo.
What do you mean?
Or they sold it twice. It was a We Gonna Make It moment. This beat is on Skyzoo's album.
Yeah, that's Ant-Man Wonder.
And Skyzoo and Ant-Man Wonder, they did the Reasonable Doubt tribute a few years ago. Skyzoo and Ja Lil Beats were supposed to do a whole project together. And I haven't been on Skyzoo's Twitter lately to see, but I haven't heard anything about him responding to it, but it's the same beat. Ross's version is mixed better. And I think Ross does a better job on this beat than Sky.
The first half of this beat is perfection. Like obviously we're biased because at least I'm biased. I'm guessing.
Are you talking about before the drums really kick in?
No, I'm talking about before the little. Because there's basically two part, like they flip the sample one way and then they do another part of the sample. So, go ahead.
The first way
they flip it is perfect.
Okay.
It's perfect. Now, granted, I love Cortex, right? It's a Cortex sample. Which is, I mean, frankly, like if you're a producer and you're trying to get beats like Ross, you should really just be trying to sample Cortex beats because nobody has rapped on more Cortex songs than Rick Ross. Love the first half of this beat. Second half of this beat is cool, but overall, this beat is crazy.
Yeah,
yeah. Anytime you get like a choral type, like, is that a word? Choral, like chorale, I guess. Like just that sample.
Cortex. Cortex is a French jazz band from the 60s and 70s.
So that's the band, but that like that. It's not a howl. It's like a soul. Like it's just. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. I'm missing my words. But I'm a fan of like just samples that like use that like a January 28th type sample from J. Cole or like I'm such a fan of those. So that's like personally that goes all day for me.
Yeah. Well, then check out Cortex because you'll love them.
Cortex.
And if you're somebody who's listened to Rick Ross songs, especially some of the ones he'll put up, some of the really good ones he'll put up on a SoundCloud for free, you'll sit there and you'll be like, oh, I know that song. Oh,
yeah, there's a
I know that song.
Really, this is his like okay.
Yeah,
yeah. I've a couple Wiz songs, Currency. Like a lot of people have sampled Cortex very blatantly.
You
but
get
like,
that very lush sound.
That may be the reason of why I love Rick Ross's beat selection. Just that lane of lush sounds, that's what I like about him.
Yeah. So Armand, you're disappointed because this beat was used elsewhere, but you like the record?
Yeah, I do like the record. You know, I like Ant-Man. Ant-Man is like, he reinterprets beats, he plays everything, whatever. But I like, I really, really, really like this record. This record is dope. Ross is, again, he's rapping very purposefully. And I think another thing, on I think the next song, I don't remember off the top, I don't have the track listed, but this song and the song before,
Not only is he really rapidly rapping intently, he definitely has a chip on his shoulder too.
Like, so that's interesting you say that. I've been trying to figure out when I want to make this point, and I guess I'll make it now. I feel like he has decided on a flow and he's going to use it, and that's all he's going to do. And it started, a great example of it is like Devil with the Blue Dress. Like, it's the Ross that we all thought we wanted. Oh, we just want that Ross over and over again. And he's giving us that flow every single song. And like seven, eight, nine tracks into this, I'm like, does he have anything else? Cause he's using the same flow in every single song.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's the da 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 da. And then the da da da. Like, he's got the little pause in the first bar. Then he follows through all the second bar. And he's got this little pattern. It's the same thing.
So it goes like this. And then it's obviously that is why I feel a little redeemed in my own self esteem. That is why it all blended together. It's like it was all the same cadence the whole time.
Armand's like,
that's true.
It's like Drake on 30 for 30, like, and on his like introspective like freestyles, it's all the same cadence.
Yes, it is. I agree with that. I think for me personally, I've been challenged to study flow, just working on my next project or whatever. So I've been challenged like the approach and how to say things. So I'm not hearing things the way that you all hear them, but you guys are way more artsy fartsy than me when it comes to hip hop. And that's cool, because I'm like, okay, I can sit back and hear it. Because, yeah, Ross does have the same flow, but to me, it doesn't bother me because I'm listening to what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's fair. That's fair, because I'm coming from a side of like, I'm judging cats now when I listen by just like different drum patterns, just from where I am trying. Like, so when I hear the same one, it's like, okay, you can switch up. And I'm not saying that Rick Ross necessarily didn't put a little bit of variation, but for a great majority of the kind of home, like a beat where you'd be like, oh, that's a home run Rick Ross beat, like instrumentation, he's going to give you that home run flow that he thinks is home run.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, he, between this and the mixtape, like, he clearly can just churn out records with this kind of flow.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. Let's talk about Ghostwriter, produced by D. Rich.
Yeah.
Those are the worst horns on the intro. What in the world? Not even trying to make them sound like real horns.
You didn't even try.
Like, dude, just first patch out of the Casio. Like, come on.
I was going to say Casio.
I heard those horns and I cringed.
You still didn't listen to that Swizz Beatz interview with Rap Radar, did you?
No.
He addressed the rumor that Casio was suing him for.
No, that was just the rumor. But what was great about that rumor, of course, is it was so ridiculous because it was like a 20% chance that it was possible.
Right. Yeah, that was, yeah.
This is one of those records that like, I think it was one of the first records that grew old quick on me. Like, its shelf life was very, very short. So I was in on it the first time I heard it. Then maybe the second or third time I liked it when I let the album play all the way through. And then after about my third or fourth listen, I was done with it.
Can we talk about the whole notion of ghostwriting though?
Sure.
Like, I feel like Rick Ross, first of all, is a phenomenal hypocrite with this on this subject.
Yes.
So, he starts this song off. He says he's the fat boy behind a lot of your favorite flows, man. I'd like to point out, Meek Mill completely stole somebody's flow.
Who?
That would be Ace Hood.
Oh, absolutely.
So absolutely. You're sitting there defending your artist, like on the same song where you're bragging about how like you're the same person behind your flows, and yet Meek Mill owes his entire flow to Ace Hood. But here's what I don't get, like. Ross has written, we know Ross has written for people before. Like, that's how he got his start, he was writing for Trina, right?
Yeah.
So
she mentioned about slipping, Slip and Slide stuff.
Yes, he
well, did. he's still technically on Slip and Slide.
Yep.
As one of the like labels, like they still get a cut of everything, which I'm sure drives him crazy. But I guess what I don't understand, like,
dang, how many? How, what did you?
What kind of deal? What kind of deal did you
life?
Right.
Yeah, it's got to be like a LeBron James Nike thing. Like, this is your 8th album. You still ain't out of the Slip and Slide deal yet.
Right, dang. and yet he's talking about Drake's being signed to Cash Money. It's like, you know what? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. But on the one hand, he's basically like putting down people who have stuff written for them, right? But he is a ghostwriter. He's putting down people. He's putting down his own clients.
His clients, exactly. His clients.
Yeah.
True. You marginalized your clients.
And he's, I feel like he's trying to make, somebody asked, I forget if it was like Breakfast Club or whatever else I heard it on, but somebody asked him about this and he was talking about how basically, you know, nobody helps him with his stuff, but he always helps people who he's working on songs with. Now, if you take him at his word, there's a whole lot of people who have stuff, quote unquote, ghostwritten by Rick. But I feel like he's just trying to make himself look better than he really is. That's my issue with this whole thing. I don't know. Like, at one point, did he executive produce an album of his? Mr. I Have Stuff Written For Me.
Right.
He's worked with Kanye. Kanye is very open about giving credit to everybody. Like the pizza man, the weed guy, like everybody gets a writing credit on a Kanye West album.
Pizza man.
The weed guy. Yeah, like
the dude like, holding the weed.
Right. Yeah. Oh, what you said add a hi-hat? Great. You're getting on the Grammy stage.
You said da-da-da-da? Oh, yep. We going to use that somewhere. Maybe or maybe not. You getting on.
So I guess I just don't, like, out of all the things to, I don't know. The whole thing with Meek Mill, it's like, really, like, we talked about this in the show at length. Meek took an L. Sorry. It happened. It's over. If you really want to help Meek Mill, put him on your album. There's nobody from MMG on this album.
I guess on one hand, that doesn't bother me. I think Meek is playing it semi-smart. Because I think Meek does need to be quiet. I thought that Dream Chasers 4 was supposed to come out on Thanksgiving weekend, Black Friday. But whatever buzz he would have built up, like, completely would have got killed with these Grammy nominations. So it's kind of good that he didn't come out with anything.
Right.
So I think it's good for Meek to just kind of stay quiet. I don't really need to hear anything from him. Wale is just kind of killing himself. But, I mean, who else do you put on there? I would love to hear Maybach O on a record. Like, I'm cool with that, but.
I mean, I completely forgot. I mean, you're saying that Meek needs to stay quiet, and yet him and Ross made that abomination. Was it World's Finest or whatever it was that rips off Brooklyn's
That doesn't,
Finest?
That song doesn't exist. Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. You heard that record, Jay?
No, I don't know.
You know what? You should play, can you play that right now? Cause that would be great to hear your reaction. It's on right, Black okay. Market.
I got it. Hold on. One second.
No, it's on Black Dollar. Sorry. Black Dollar. It's called World's Finest.
Tonight, the night. One night only. Already sold out. It's what you've been asking
Amazing
for.
Music.
Double L. Meek Millie.
Rosé!
All the whips got rims on them. My bitch post big snow filters. Rich car, fucking stickers. Six.
I'm gonna skip to the hook. Hold on.
Yeah. So.
Good night.
So they went to Scott Storch went to the trouble of
that wasn't the instrumental to do that on.
No, they didn't just like use the beat, like they remade it.
That wasn't the instrumental to do that on.
At all, man.
Come on, Rick. Like, you could have done your big thing. Like, that wasn't the one.
You know what I love about Rick Ross is nobody else is giving Scott Storch money right now. Scott Storch must have like something on him, because Scott Storch has a credit on this album, Black Market.
I'll say this though. I always feel like the producers who had a run and they sort of like dried up, I feel like they still got stuff in the cut, but nobody's really going to them. Mm. So I feel like, you know, Scott Storch, like I feel like Lil Jon is probably sitting on freaking Illmatic or something like that. Like nobody's coming. Oh, like Lil Jon's like, oh, you ain't coming to me for beats no more.
I'm going.
And he probably got some fire in the tuck.
Anything else you guys want to say about Ghost Rider?
Where's Omarion? I'm sorry, that's random. Was Omarion on MMG? Was that Omarion singing? That wasn't Omarion singing, was it?
No, that was Kevin Kossom.
Okay. Where's Omarion?
Complaining on Twitter.
All right. I just thought I'd ask.
No slander for the Grantland article and for May Touch. So...
I'm never
slandering Omarion because
no, and
sense.
I don't even mean where's Omarion in general. I mean where's Omarion? It like isn't he MMG?
Yeah,
last time I checked on Omarion, that's what was new.
Yeah. I don't know what. I know that the MMG deal was it was a label deal, but it was not distribution. So from my understanding, they had to convince Warner or Atlantic or whoever they had the. I think it was Warner. They had to convince Warner to put money behind the project, and the only people that Warner were remotely interested in was Wale and Meek. Anybody else that they signed, they weren't really trying to hear it, and that's why it's kind of, you know, Staley and Rocky Fresh and some of the other guys was a little slower for them.
Oh, hey, such is life. That's how it goes.
Black Opium, featuring DJ Premier, produced by Black Metaphor.
Shout out to Black Metaphor, man. Like, he low-key, I've not heard a whack beat from him yet.
This beat is cool. It's cool. This is a cool song, but it's not amazing.
It's not amazing, but it's super dope. I think the problem is the first time I heard this record, I was like, yo, Ross on Premiere? This is going to be dope. And it wasn't Ross on Premiere. So once I got that out the way, the switch and the little... like that, I don't know why. Like that's, it sounds sinister to me, as you said. It just sounds dark, and I think it works for Ross. And you know, you got Premier cutting up Ross's grunt on the hook. Like,
I kind of wish he, you know, I don't know. It's funny. Like sometimes Primo can be energetic, if that's the word I want to use with his scratching. This is not one of those records.
I don't think it needed it though. It's very slow tempo. You think so?
Otherwise, I don't know. Yeah, it was okay. It was cool. What'd you think, Jay?
Otherwise, it's like, are you saying like otherwise it's like all laid back? Like
it's a little laid back. Like even something like, so the record he did with Devin way back, right? Doobie Ashtray. Like even though that's a very slow record, like the scratches actually bring like energy to it. Like they're really like, they could come out of nowhere. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm glad I learned about the vocabulary, that sinister whistle. That was a great way to describe that, because I was trying to figure out what that is that I like about stuff. And sometimes it's sinister, and that's what it is.
Sinister whistle.
Sinister whistle.
We got a whole vocabulary over here at Clock Reduce.
But, I mean, outside of just the feel of it, not really like super standout for me. Other than just like vibing. I could revisit this. See, I think I'm more on the kind of first take opinion. And so, like, I can go through, like, tracks and, like, find, like, what I would put in certain playlists for certain moods and, like, have play in the background and kind of, like, grow on. So this is maybe one of those grow on me. But that sinister whistle, though, like, anything in that, like, that register always does it for me on some moody type stuff.
A record that definitely should have opinions from everybody involved, Can't Say No, featuring Mariah Carey, produced by, and this should be no surprise, J.R. Rotem.
Oh, J-R.
Yeah. The first time I heard this, first of all, Armand texted me. I think you texted me to ask me if I'd heard this.
Yeah. Well, I asked you. Well, first I was like, you know, I asked if you heard the album, and then you said, no, I'm not going to hear it till the morning. I said, text me back when you hear the Mariah record.
I'm driving in the car, and this comes on for the first time, and no joke, I did like the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase laugh. For like a good 15 to 20 seconds, easily. Like uncontrollably, just like evil villain laughing when I heard this. This song, kind of works.
It works, doesn't it?
This works. This song works. This is, I don't know if I'm slandering, but in my opinion, it's good. This is what I felt on Epiphany of Marcus Garvey in a good way. This is nostalgia. You know,
Marcus Graham.
Marcus Garvey.
That's the sequel.
That's the sequel coming out on Black History Month. It's coming out.
Yo, see, we go Liberia, then we go. Yeah. I'm sorry, I have a fro today.
So somebody, please Photoshop me up a cover for the Epiphany of Marcus Garvey.
Marcus Garvey.
You know what? Somebody's gonna do it. They're gonna take
it's
the cover.
It's gonna have a cash in. That's. Oh, y'all staying? Oh, okay. Oh, no, I'm sorry. But no. This is, I think, probably just because of, like, the remake of Mariah. Like, this is why, this is the nostalgia that I liked. Mm-hmm. I'm such an R&B kid. I'm not even a hip-hop head at all. The jig is up. The jig is up. There, okay, I said it, folks. The jig is up. I grew up on R&B, all right? Late 80s, 90s R&B.
Yeah.
I want to sing. I wish I could sing better than I could rap, but I got to do what I can do well. But yeah, so anytime.
We were talking on Twitter one day, it was like years ago, and then like you referenced a random Tevin Campbell song that I didn't know anybody knew about. I don't know. I forgot which one. I don't know if it was Always in My Heart. It was something off the I'm Ready album. And I was like, someone else knows. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was good.
Yeah, yeah. And you made me feel like I'm not weird.
Not at all. Not the best rappers are R&B heads. I just believe that.
Says the man who's an R&B head.
And a rapper.
Yeah, and a rapper. What do you?
Problem. Sort of bias.
Well, solved.
Yeah, this record works, man. I forgot how much I liked Can't Let Go. Like, this made me pull up the Mariah record. Like, yo, that record is hard.
How was this? How did they put out Sorry as a single and not this?
Oh, God.
Mariah probably wouldn't clear it. I think Mariah is like on a comeback trail, sort of. And I don't know if Mariah, who probably wants to be the number one pop artist in the world again, I don't know if associating one of her early records with a Rick Ross is something that her team wants her to do. Now, we know that Mariah is a hip-hop head. She's
she did a collaboration with Meek Millie.
She did a lot, yeah. She did a record with Freeway. She had Freeway on an album. She appeared in State Property 2.
She sang on Oh Boy.
She did sing on Oh Boy.
She sang on right. Oh Boy?
Yeah.
Well, basically Just Blaze resold her the beat, which that's an ingenious move.
Huh.
What's the record? Didn't she perform that?
It's called I Need You.
I Need You.
That was
right.
The record with Freeway. No, it wasn't. Never mind. No, it wasn't. That was You Got Me. Yeah, I Need You, Boy. And then I think Jewels was on the remix, I think.
Didn't she perform that at like NBA All-Star Weekend?
Yeah. Was that Jersey Dress Mariah?
It was Jersey Dress Mariah.
That was Jersey Dress season. Yeah. Jersey Dress Glitter Mariah.
One of the greatest moments in television history. but yeah, like, yeah, this record totally works, but I get why they didn't make it a single. You're right, Doc. Like, I think this will be like sort of a shock or a joke.
Yeah,
like,
it would be something different.
But I think Mariah, unfortunately, has fallen victim to Instagram with those videos coming, because now they're starting to resurface again with the original versions of her singing the Christmas carols and her voice cracking and stuff. Those records are coming back out because I'm getting tagged in them on Instagram.
Great.
So
tag me also.
Okay. I'll send them to you because I think there's two I saw in the last like 2 days.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're bad, and I don't think that's doing her any favors, unfortunately, because you know, as a 90s kid, Mariah got records, man, and I would just, you know, love to see her continue making those records, but I don't know if that's gonna happen. But this record is dope.
Sort of switching gears from this record, Peace Sign, produced by DJ Mustard.
Oh, very ratchet. Here we go.
With, of all people, Red Cafe on the hook.
That's Red Cafe?
Red Cafe.
And that's because this was originally a Jeremiah record with Fab and Red Cafe on it. His album got delayed forever and ever. Actually, just finally came out. And it Jeremiah's version, obviously, doesn't exist anymore because Mustard sold the song to Russ. So that's why Red Cafe is on the hook.
And how dirty did Def Jam do Jeremiah by dropping his album
like out the blue.
Right. And given and having records, you know, clearly like Red Cafe was on the hook, like the reference with Mustard or whatever. And the. Yeah.
I feel bad for Jeremiah because he's proven that he can write records. He can write hit records. But for whatever reason, there's a really interesting Billboard article with him where he just sort of talks about him being shy and, you know, being timid and second guessing himself. And that was sort of what was holding him back. I think there's a little more to that. But, you know, that it was really telling that Def Jam was just like, you know what, here.
Better yet, why not, like, him and Ross are on the same label. Like, why not just have the song appear on both projects?
True.
Oh, my goodness. The song isn't bad. I think it actually kind of works for what it's trying to do. I don't mind it, but I'm guessing, Armand, you're not a real big fan.
I mean, like, when I played the album all the way through, it was like, eh, but, yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I don't want to hear about rappers having sex. I'm good on that.
It was so descriptive.
It's very descriptive. Unnecessarily descriptive. And I'm a visual person, so when somebody's talking to me...
Monster's ball.
It was make me feel good?
It was make me feel good.
All right. We're not going to go there. We're going to stop right there. The funny thing that I will say is, I like the fact that Mustard's tag was like slowed down. That was funny.
He started doing that on the record, was it Big Sean and Janae on, can't even think of it. Yeah. Anyway, it was on Big Sean's album this year. Yeah. He's been playing around with that a little bit. He's probably getting bored.
Yeah. This was just ratchet for the sake of being ratchet. I mean, look, we came from, like, I'm dealing with drug addiction, you know, the feds trying to take my house. Like, y'all don't know what it's like for the feds to take your house. I'm trying to work. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to be a human. And then we just went, well, let's get ratchet.
Like, peace on. All right.
And you know what? That's life, though. You know, sometimes you go home and just get ratchet real quick. You know, hey, wow. Maybe that's artistically just part of the story. That's the narrative.
Yeah,
you're giving him too much credit.
I'm trying.
I know.
I'm preaching for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's start. It seemed like it was shoved in there.
Pretty much. Like, actually, the whole rest of this album is shoved in here.
Yeah, I think we can skip through like the rest of these records pretty quickly.
Yeah. Very Best featuring Mary J. This beat actually isn't bad. It's kind of busy. I actually appreciate that on the actual verses that they drop out the busy parts of the beat like that. It actually kind of works. The part with Mary J singing on the hook doesn't really fit her at all.
I'm good on this record.
The record with Chris Brown, Sorry, produced by Storch. I'm like, eh.
It's such a back. This song is a backhanded apology. You don't mean this. You don't mean this.
Ross struggles with R&B-ish singles, doesn't he?
He does. Struggles because they're not good. Remember You the Boss?
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm saying in general, like, actually, I think Ross has a singles problem.
Interesting.
Right? I mean, he really kind of does. Like, sometimes it gets there. Like,
I was going to say, well, maybe it's because when he hits, he really hits. So, Hustling's huge. The Boss is huge. BMF is huge. What was the record with John Legend?
Magnificent was huge. It wasn't huge. It was massive. Good.
I heard that in Ohio, they played that on the radio every 10 or 15 minutes. Like, that record was constant. Aston Martin Music was huge. But you make a good point, Doc, because these records are so huge, he has a whole lot of other singles that don't do as well also.
Well, I feel like, you know, because I was comparing his, you know, Black Dollar and Black Market to the two albums he put out last year, which I think had arguably better singles, but they weren't very consistent. Whereas to me, there's a lot of consistency coming from Ross right now, but there's no big, like, he still is not quite putting it all together. You know what I mean? And this record with Chris Brown, it's just like pretty much, oh, it's got a Chris Brown hook. I guess it could be the single. Like, it's track 13. How is track 13 your single?
I think this was like Def Jam saying, please just give us something.
Give us something.
Yeah. And Ross was like, all right, here you go. And this was laying around Def Jam offices or something like that. And then he just picked it up and got on it. So I'm good.
And then the last track on the retail, the non-deluxe edition, Dope featuring Future.
18 Dope.
the future stimulus package did not come through.
Thank you for saying.
Agree.
The beat is boring. Future's running out of steam.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Agree. You can watch it happen, like in album by album. Like we joked about it when we talked about Jadakiss, but it's like it's a rule at Def Jam right now. I'm guessing. Are you a rapper? Awesome. Future's on your album, and he's not even signed to Def Jam, which makes that even more amazing. But like, this is just we're scraping the bottom of the barrel of like Future stuff. Like he really needs to go away for a little while.
Yeah. Well, he did on the Grammy nods.
It's true.
Curry with the pop boy.
And then continuing a Ross tradition of putting dope tracks as bonus tracks, we get mixed versions of Foreclosures and Money Dance. Armand, you still like both these records?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Money Dance really grew on me. I feel like I was harsh on that.
You were.
It's still 7.5 minutes long. Like, come on. Really?
I love Money Dance for that.
No.
Again, Jake won.
Of course.
And then Carol City.
I actually like this record.
Ross just couldn't make an album without a song like this, could he?
But I think he's really talking on this record. Like the content on here, even though it's a stereotypical trap beat, although it's a pretty good stereotypical trap beat.
It's cool.
Ross is saying some stuff on here. I really like storytelling backstory Ross. I think it works.
So overall, Jay, what did you think? So you said that you're sort of you have sort of like a first take opinion on this
right.
project. What did you think overall?
I thought the beginning, like first, like if this were a side A, side B type yeah. album, I love side A, and then it started to fizzle out. Minus a couple of like I said, one thing I learned from this album is I love Jake One. Every highlight of this album has Jake One attached to it. But like I said, I really like side A. If I were to split them in half, I wish that I would like to see Rick Ross like go just straight like introspective like on some how I felt at the beginning of the album, because that was a different turn for me. But what it's also doing is it's making me want to go back and just revisit more Rick Ross stuff, like and go reminisce back on like Aston Martin music and like just all the way back.
Go to his SoundCloud. Because he puts up stuff on his SoundCloud that does not make the albums. Some of this stuff is just incredible.
I'll take that. You know what else I'll say this? I'll interject this too. If this album also makes me realize how much I do love his Biggie persona, and I wish he did even more. Or not even more, but like maybe on some sort of like little snack pack, like boom. Like, this is my Biggie persona in these four songs.
Right.
Story. Maybe even something, okay, now I'm going all off, but maybe even something where we see, like, right before, you know, right, like, Biggie at the beginning, like, even his whole evolution as he matured and his music started to change, even if, like, Rick Ross did that. I'll call him up and give him that idea.
I was going to say, you know, we're a year and 3 or 4 months away from the 20th anniversary of Life After Death, so, you know, maybe he could do a little something. He could talk big. He could talk Puff into Life After Death 2, which would probably cause this podcast to melt down in pure outrage. But no, I hear you. Yeah, he's got a good little Biggie thing going.
He could execute that. I think.
Oh, I no.
I think he could.
I don't even want. Is he so him and Meek are going to do I Love the Dough? Like, okay. Let's. So honestly, Doc, and I'm.
What do you think about this album?
This might be on my end of year list.
Really?
I really, really like this album.
I started making a 1.5.
Now, for your 1.5, it's funny because on Black Dollar, the only record that I wanted was We Gonna Make It.
Oh, Money and Powder.
Nah, never
mind. Oh, that Key Wayne beat is really good. And Driver Brother Crazy. That beat is great.
Geechee Liberace's okay.
That one's not bad.
Like, it had some cool
records.
That's
another Jake
like,
One record.
Oh, Geechee Liberace. Okay, yeah.
Jake One, Jake Uno.
So, like, there were some cool records, but like when I went back and listened to them, and I'm like, which ones do I want
on a 1.5 because I was like dying for a 1.5. But Doc shut me down because I'm texting him. I think it was like Saturday morning. I'm like, yeah, you could do this and we could do this. And he's like, we have a lot to talk about. And I was like, yeah, you could. We have a lot to talk about. It's basically like, all right, shut up and wait till we record the show. But yeah, there was that. And then the three or four records that he put out on SoundCloud, they had the samples that wouldn't clear. I think you do those and you remove like the last maybe three or four records or whatever.
Amazing Grace, Buried in the Streets. And he actually, I know he's not your favorite rapper. He did a really good record with Rocky Fresh that just came out called Thank You. It is, it's essentially a Rick Ross record.
Okay.
But, you know, I got some ideas for, might do a little something.
All right. Okay. But yeah, this might make my end of the year list. I really, really, really like this project. I wish it would have came out a little earlier in the year. But yeah, like this was, and like Jay, much like Jay, it made me want to, I went back and listened to God Forgives I Don't, Hood Billionaire. Mastermind really wasn't that good, but Hood Billionaire had the Yo Gotti record, Trap Love, had Elvis Presley Boulevard.
Elvis Presley. See, that's a Ross single.
Has some good records. But the problem is that Elvis Presley Boulevard on the surface sounded like 10 other Ross records he had already did. So people just kind of threw it off to the side.
It's like the best type of that record,
though. Absolutely. I agree. And then you have Project Pat on there. Absolutely.
It works. Neighborhood Drug Dealer.
Yeah. I'm keep telling people, like, if he would have put Mastermind and Hood Billionaire, the best songs from that.
Same concept. It's clear that Ross can put a lot of music out. Like he could generate enough stuff. He's just not, to me anyway, he's still not putting it all together.
Yeah, he needs a better A&R than DJ Khaled.
That's fair to say. That's definitely fair to say.
Yeah, sorry, we were dominating the conversation. We sort of shut Jay out there for a minute.
No. I wasn't shut out at all. I was learning because, to be honest, like I said, I'm a pedestrian listener, but I think like even in your analysis of he doesn't have it all together or put it all together, that's one of the reasons why I haven't just stuck with him. Why I go check back, see what's going on. Oh, okay.
Honestly, like I'm still stuck. Like, I get if that's the theory, they don't want like this Ross record as like a big single, a big push from Def Jam. But really, you don't throw that out for like Nah Right and Rap Radar. Like, really?
Agreed. They could have at least leaked it. I agree.
Right. That's the record you put out like a week before, and all of a sudden people are like, "Oh, wait a minute, what's going on?"
I agree with that. Yeah. Instead of like stereotypical, although the records he put out were dope, like they were
right.
Rick Ross records.
They were Rick Ross records. All right. Anything else you want to say about this project?
Nah, I got everything.
Anything else you want to talk about this week?
Thanks, Jay, for being on the show, man.
Yo, thank y'all for having me, man. And I'll say my little thing. I really appreciate what you guys do. I mean, even for me learning over the years listening to you guys, and you guys are some like for real, real, real hip hop heads. And you know, I can swim, but I'm not a hip hop head. So even to be able to just be in a conversation and learn and contribute, it means a whole lot to me as an MC. I just appreciate, you know, all the years that you guys have put in, like for real. Like I don't get all sentimental and side A, you know, ish, but like side A of Black Market. But like really just having you guys like consistently do this podcast for us, you know, lone nerds at our laptops, like we really appreciate it. So for me to be an MC, but also like to be a fan before people knew about my music and stuff, like I really appreciate what you guys do. I'm glad you guys have me on the show.
Word.
Man.
Yeah. Your work isn't in vain. And when I saw like Fourth District team up, I was like, oh, dumb. Like, for real, like you guys keep on, you know, if this is what you're doing and you guys are having any like, you know, oh, we don't know if we want to do this. We don't know. Like, nah, there's people out there that are listening and we're learning a whole lot. And I've learned a whole lot over these past few years. So for real.
All right. I can't think of any better way to end than that. Thank you, Jay, for joining us for both sides.
Definitely got to have you back. Go get Fly Exam right now. Really, 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 really dope album. Fahrenheit 99 is incredible.
Thank you.
I love that record. Record is incredible. Yeah, go get Fly Exam. Really, really dope album. And we will definitely, we need to have you back on the show.
Yeah, definitely.